Hello and welcome to the Inclusion Zone podcast. We are here having a conversation with Brian Gruber. He's going to tell us about a very important case that came to an 8-0 decision by the Supreme Court last March of 2017 with an 8-0 decision that IEPs, and we all know what those are, individualized education programs, must give students with disabilities more than minimal educational benefit. And many say that this case could be a real game changer. Others say, maybe not so much. But Chief Justice Roberts wrote, every child should have the chance to meet challenging objectives. So we're going to have a conversation with Brian, who's going to help us understand what the Andrew F. versus Douglas County School District case means for the disability community, for families, and most importantly, for students with disabilities. Hello, Brian.
Hi, everybody.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. We're going to get right into this. Andrew F. case, Brian Gruber, can you please give us a quick rundown of what the Andrew F. case means?
Certainly. So, Mary, let me give you some context, and then I'll give you the quick rundown. When the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act was formulated and has been revised now several times, it has instilled upon eligible children the right to a free, appropriate public education. What the law failed to do is define the word appropriate. And so that's been left to judicial determination since its inception. Different federal judicial circuits have interpreted the word appropriate to have different meanings. And in some parts of the country, the word appropriate was determined to mean that a child's right was to an education that would provide meaningful educational progress. In other parts of the country, the word appropriate was defined as being an education that provided a child with slightly more than de minimis or a minimal level of progress, moving the pebble a little bit forward, but not terribly far, would satisfy the school district's obligation to the child to provide an appropriate education. The parents of Andrew F. live in Colorado, outside of Denver, and Andrew F. is a child with autism. And the family noticed that for a number of years, he wasn't making the kinds of academic gains that the family really believed he should. And I should broaden that and not just limit it to academic, but educational gains that the family thought that he should be making. The IEP goals were repeated year after year, and they were really dissatisfied with how the school district was defining his right to a FAPE, a free appropriate public education. And so they withdrew him from the public school and enrolled him in a highly specialized private school and took the school district to what's known as a due process hearing, a legal forum, to try to establish that the school district had failed to provide a FAPE, a free appropriate public education, and that they were legally entitled to a tuition reimbursement to recover the cost of their private education for doing what the school district should have done all along and provided Andrew with FAPE. And the parents lost at the due process level, with the judge determining that the school district's obligation was to provide Andrew with something more than de minimis education to satisfy the district's obligation to him. The parents didn't like that result and appealed to the United States District Court, where they lost again. And they appealed that decision to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, which determined that the standard for the states that fall in the 10th Judicial Circuit, one of which being Colorado, followed a standard of slightly more than de minimis as being appropriate for satisfaction of the FAPE requirement. And so the family appealed that to the United States District Court. And so that's what the case was about, was how much progress is a child entitled to make or expected to make to satisfy the school district's obligation to provide FAPE.
So this family went through quite a lot in order to get this up to the Supreme Court, kept losing. And so this case comes to the Supreme Court, and Chief Justice Roberts writes definitively that
children should have, we should have an expectation that these children will make some sort of progress with the wording, that they should have challenging objectives, appropriate, ambitious, challenging objectives in light of their circumstances. Can you explain how did slightly more than de minimis stand for as long as it did in certain jurisdictions?
I don't know if I can explain how it stood, but rather the phenomenon that it did. Each different part of the country has different cultures and different expectations, and cases get brought into court systems at all different times, and we don't always like the fact patterns that make up cases and run the risk of establishing legal precedent. But in multiple federal judicial circuits, substantial portions of this country operated under a standard that the school system's obligation to students with disabilities was nothing more than just seeing some level of progress, some satisfaction of a level of progress. It's important to recognize that courts have routinely said that the obligation for a free, appropriate public education does not include maximizing a child's potential. So the word appropriate, as left undefined by Congress in drafting the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, was how are we defining appropriate? And we know that it's something more than zero and something less than maximizing a child's potential. So school districts were successful over the years in convincing courts that what this law did was provide an opportunity to open the schoolhouse doors for these kids, and that some level of progress satisfied the objectives of the act. And obviously, last March, Justice Roberts and his colleagues on the court determined that a standard that only sought to provide slightly more than de minimis benefit couldn't possibly have been what Congress intended. It couldn't possibly be the use of federal taxpayer money when we're talking about educating the neediest children in our society.
It's pretty unbelievable. So we now have this ruling, and we are supposed to now understand that there's significant progress that should be obtained for each child who has an IEP. How is that different from the significant progress that we've all been expecting before?
I think the way that it's different is in terms of what we have a right to expect. So as parents, every parent should expect that their child is going to maximize their potential. Why would you want anything less for your child than to maximize their potential? And I think that the majority of educators also want to see children succeed and maximize their potential. No teacher works as hard as they do for de minimis progress.
Great
respect
for
teachers. And I know the teachers want to see children succeed and children to soar. The problem because the way in which this law now changes, this ruling changes, is for parents who may have previously been told, your child's making progress and the amount of progress that they're making is good enough, may now have some legal leverage to push back and say, you know what, it's yes, he's made progress, but it's not far enough. If you'll indulge me for a moment, an exercise that I often use with groups in trying to sort of help tease out what this ruling would be is that if I left my house in the morning and I have a dollar in my pocket, and on the way into my office, I step down and I pick up a quarter off of the floor, I think we would all objectively say that I now have more money in my pocket than when I left the house. Those who have competent math skills may even recognize that I now have 25% more money than when I walked in the door. but has my buying power really changed? And I think mm-hmm. I think honestly we would say no. You know, going from $1 to $1.25 might constitute progress if our standard is yes. We're looking at you having more than you did before. If we're looking at increasing my buying power, increasing my functionality, the answer sorely is no.
Mm-hmm. And also, I guess it depends on what's for sale, where you're shopping. And hopefully,
okay, Mary. Well, then I still can't buy more than two items at the dollar store.
Good point. Good point.
So my buying power, regardless of where I'm shopping, hasn't changed by the addition of 25% more pennies in my pocket. And so what Andrew F. does for us is raises the bar in terms of what is the expectation in terms of the functionality of the education that we are now expecting for our children to receive.
Okay. And so how will that progress be determined?
So progress is determined the same ways that it always has been. We're always looking for multi-confirming sources of information. The very first place that we're looking to define progress is on a child's goals and objectives on their IEP and what sort of data is being collected by the school to support whether they're meeting their annual goals. The second way is we're always looking at objective testing. If a child is being given standardized assessments, formal assessments, what is the data telling us in terms of measuring their performance pre and post test? And then the last way, of course, is by collecting what we call informal data. What does it look like in the classroom? What are teachers reporting? What are parents reporting? What does homework look like? All of that sort of those soft data points in terms of measuring the functionality. But really it starts and ends with whether the child is making progress on their IEP. And so what Andrew F. really does in terms of how we're going to measure progress is puts an awful lot more pressure on schools and IEP teams to make sure that IEPs are drafted so that they are clearly defined and discrete and goals are measurable. They're ambitious, they're challenging, and they're assertive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, that all sounds terrific. So if you're a parent and you're not convinced that your kid is making the kind of progress that he or she is capable of making, what options do they have available to them now in light of Andrew F.?
So the options haven't changed. The battleground, if you will, and I don't like that term, but it was the one that came to my mind. The battleground, if you will, is always the IEP. It's always the IEP meeting. I'm a very strong believer that any parental concerns need to be presented to an IEP team before they can go any further, so that you give the school-based team members an opportunity to meet parental concerns. Concerns about levels of need to be presented to the IEP team. If the parents are dissatisfied, they have the option of asking the school district for mediation or more dramatically to take the school district to a due process hearing. Those options haven't been altered by Andrew F. at all. What has been altered by Andrew F. Is the yardstick that the finder of fact at a due process hearing is going to use in terms of determining whether the school district has met its obligation to provide FAPE. So again, it's what we're looking at in terms of the amount of progress a child is making and is that progress sufficient or is what's proposed for that child reasonably calculated to provide meaningful educational progress based upon the child's circumstances, a higher standard than we had before to judging whether the school district is meeting its obligation to the student.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, a higher standard, that sounds exactly what people in the advocacy world are looking for. I'm sure it's exactly what the parents in this case were angling for. But I know that there have been detractors to this case. There have been some organizations out there that were not in favor of this case, were on the side of the school district. And also just say that this case really doesn't amount to much of anything. Are you able to just give your point of view on that, please?
So I think that an awful lot of school districts and school personnel that I've spoken to in the year, 11 months or so since Andrew F. Came out, have taken the position that the court is now just mandating what they were doing all along. That educators, get up in the morning and work as hard as they do all day and spend their after hours responding to emails and grading papers and doing all the things that professional educators do, in a belief that their students are going to be making truly meaningful progress, and that the only thing that this does is let them off, reduces the amount of times in which they are off the hook for not making a higher level of progress. Yes, the National Association of School Boards and various educator groups have been adamantly opposed to raising the standard because they believe it has the capacity to create unreasonable expectations, but also to put too much pressure on school staff and school resources without really giving anything more substantive, because teachers were already giving their best to try to improve outcomes. From a parent perspective, I disagree with that approach. I think this was an important decision for a variety of students, particularly those that are most impacted, those that need education to be truly functional for them. It holds the school district to a higher standard in terms of what amount of progress we're going to shoot for and be satisfied with a student obtaining. I think it's very powerful conversation starter for parents to use some of the language from the decision and be asking for goals and objectives that are indeed ambitious, assertive, and challenging for their student. It says to parents that just because the child has a disability doesn't limit their abilities. I think it's an important decision. It will be years before we understand whether this is just a bump in the road in terms of public education, or whether this is truly something monumental. It certainly felt momentous at the time. 11 months out, I've not dampened my enthusiasm for what I thought was a really well thought out and well rendered decision. But again, how it gets utilized on the ground and as cases make their way through the courts based upon Andrew F., we'll see.
Well, what I'd like to just know, Brian, is, can you give us a hint about how you think that some of these cases that might be coming now down the road as a result of Andrew F., what are they going to look like, and how is it going to help push the envelope?
Well, I think the cases themselves look the same. We have families who are dissatisfied with the IEP or the placement or the services or the level of progress the student is raising. Where is it's going to have the potential for greatest impact is two. One are the states that previously followed the slightly more than de minimis standard, because those states now need to increase the demands that they are expecting for parents to reasonably make in terms of reasonable rates of progress. But I think the greatest impact is going to be on the kids who, as I said before, the kids who need education to be more functional. I'm talking about the students who are not pursuing a high school diploma, but are pursuing alternative outcome, alternative curriculums, kids who are needing functional life skills, because where previously the district may have had lower expectations and sort of been satisfied with low rates of progress because of the child's, the impact on the child's disability, the impact now may be greater. The expectations may be significantly higher. But again, we'll see that as cases are brought, as due process cases are brought, and then ultimately are appealed into federal court and then up to the circuit court of appeals level. That's when we start to really see the impact of the Supreme Court decision, is when cases make their way up through the district court up to the various circuit courts of appeal.
Excellent. Well, okay, so we just got to sit tight, I guess, and watch as this unfolds a little further, but we have a really great starting point, more than we've had before. And I thank you so much, Brian, for shedding some light on this, and for helping to kind of demystify this very important case that all families need to know about. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I always appreciate the opportunity to chat with you about issues involving our special needs kids.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Brian, and thank you, everyone listening. This has been an Inclusion Zone podcast, and we have enjoyed this conversation immensely, and we'll have another one on another great topic sometime very soon, so keep listening.
Shutterstock Music.